Today's episode of Locked On Phoenix Suns is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get 20% off your first order.
You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Another Zona Monday here on today's Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I am your host, Brendan Kleen. You can follow our show on Twitter and on Instagram at Locked On PHX Suns, and you can follow me on Twitter at Brendan Kleen 14. But as I said, it is a Monday, which means that Brandon is here. You know him as Zona on Twitter. He is at AZ Sports Zone on Twitter, and we're here after a back-to-back against the Denver Nuggets, both losses, both overtime games. So we're going to break those games down, what we can learn from those. And then with Devin Booker sidelined with a left hamstring strain, we're going to talk about some of what maybe we can expect from how the Suns can stay competitive, because they are now only 8-6 and can't afford to keep dropping games even if Devin Booker is out of the lineup. They have a couple more home games this week to right the ship, so we will dive into what needs to happen for them to win those and get a little bit more stable ground here in the Western Conference. But we are talking late Sunday night. How was your weekend, Brandon?
It's pretty good. Obviously, the losses were a little demoralizing, but other than that, not too bad.
You handle it okay? I feel like Suns Twitter almost imploded. I feel like I was going to wake up and there might be like half the amount of accounts, like people would just deactivate and stop paying attention to the team.
Yeah, somehow my account is not suspended. But no, I sat out the second game as far as like live tweeting, just for my own like mental health. And
that was smart.
Yeah, it was just another, I mean, really brutal back-to-back. Like just the way the games like not only ended, but just all the iffy calls that ended up being extremely impactful. So yeah, it was just kind of like a snowball effect of just some of the worst possible luck that a team can have, and just typical Suns.
Yeah, it definitely feels like a coming back down to earth type of weekend. I remain pretty optimistic about this team. I feel like you're pretty level-headed about things. Yeah, I figured you would be too. 8-6 is, all things considered, a pretty nice place to be. The Suns did steal one over Denver earlier in the season, but I mean, look, Denver remains a very good team. 130-126 on Friday night, and then 120-112 loss on Saturday night. As I said, both games go to overtime. Saturday's game is double overtime, so these teams both, I'm sure, will be appreciating the layoff that they have. The Suns don't play again until Wednesday. So that's a silver lining here, both for Devin Booker's injury and just recovering from really hard-fought games here. It did feel like the team was pretty content and like okay with the fight that they showed on Saturday, just being shorthanded without Booker, not to mention Dario Saric, who didn't play in either one of these. But let's start on Friday, because to me, it felt like that one was the most winnable, just with Booker being in the lineup. He scores, I believe, 31 points, correct? Yeah, 31, 5, and 5. Looks like the scoring night we've been waiting for from Devin Booker. What went wrong in that one? Because we also got a pretty monster game from DeAndre Ayton. Mikal Bridges is making threes, and it looks like, felt like the defense sort of just fell apart in the second half of Friday's game.
Yeah, there's just, they need to learn how to play with the lead better. And that's pretty common for a young team. And I think they just get a little too content and they don't close teams out and they just kind of let Denver hang around. And you can't do that with a team that's as streaky as Denver is offensively, because they can get back in a game just like that. So just learning how to play with the lead and just build on it and just step onto people's throats and just make sure they're not in striking distance, because that's been a pretty common theme for them. I think like the Detroit game when they're up by 24 or whatever it was and blowing that lead. So just getting better at realizing, you know, just because you got there doesn't mean the work is done. It's a 48-minute game. So That loss is definitely a lot more brutal, I think, than Saturday's for sure. And it could be one that comes back to haunt them as far as like the seeding goes. I'm relatively optimistic about their team right now as far as long-term, as long as Booker's healthy. I think this is still like a top six seed. They just need a few things to click. And I do think they're really missing Dario Saric. He really unlocks the bench, and that's part of what was carrying them early in the year, is just how great their bench was. So they're really missing him. And do they just need to figure out how to play with the lead?
Yeah, I think I might have said 8-6 when I was going through it, because I'm on the box score of the first game, but they are 8-7. My point still stands. I agree with you. I'm not willing to say the sky is falling yet. I think Denver's a good team. They definitely let the Nuggets get comfortable, though, and Denver was able to pull above 500, which they had been hovering around for a while. Michael Porter Jr. returns in these games, and Nikola Jokic just put on a masterclass. I mean, that guy, to me, is just at another level this year. It's remarkable that he's still 25. He showed why he's one of the best players in the NBA, the ability to impact the game, even when his shot wasn't falling on Saturday, even on short rest and with the losses they had over the offseason, with Will Barton playing like garbage most of the time recently. He just elevates that team and allows them to win some of these games where things are close. A couple calls here and there do determine the outcome. And yeah, the Suns, I agree with you. I think they're still adjusting and acclimating to one another and to how to play when teams are bringing their A game every night against you. And, you know, it's not a 24-minute sort of endeavor where you can go home for the night after you take a lead. And I think, you know, 16 turnovers is something that stands out to me from that first one. And just late game stuff where I believe that was the game where Chris Paul had a turnover late. That was pretty abysmal. He only shoots 5 of 15. The threes sort of go cold. But like I said, it was the defense for me that was disappointing, because it wasn't one guy. And I think that makes it a little bit more challenging to sort of diagnose, I guess, because it wasn't like, you know, anyone who's watched Denver come to Phoenix in the past couple of seasons knows Jamal Murray's liable to set a career high every time he enters the Arizona airport. But that wasn't even what happened here. It was a team sort of thing. Monte Morris has some nice scoring opportunities. Gary Harris, they're beating the Suns zone. They're beating the Suns when they switch on Jokic. They're beating when they double on Jokic. Denver didn't even shoot very well. 6 of 26 in that first game. So I agree with you, and I think the fact that it didn't come from one place or one specific sort of area where Denver was able to dominate on Friday night was, I guess, to me, the biggest reason for negativity coming out of that one, because you get a bounce-back game from Booker where he really looks like himself for the first time, but the defense, which was maybe a little bit of a concern heading into the season, and I think we're sort of seeing the bad side of the defense as we've gotten more games under our belt here.
Yeah, definitely. I think just, you know, the stretches where they just let Denver get whatever they want in the paint just really like helped build their confidence to just pretty much feel comfortable getting wherever they wanted on the court, which obviously you can't have. So I think just making adjustments in game is going to be key for Monty, and he's already admitted to that a little bit. So another thing that's kind of jumped out just early on in the season, just the free throw attempts being at their 29th. Right now in the league at just 18.7. So that needs a change. And they're also letting teams outshoot them by about, you know, 5 free throws per game. So that's another area they need to, it's not just on the refs, that's on them just being aggressive, attacking the rim. You know,
is that on Booker to you more than anybody? Cause it feels like he's the guy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think he's at his best anyways when he's attacking. Like, he's not someone that should be settling for a ton of jumpers. And so it starts with him for sure, but there needs to be more from Ayton as well, and Mikal just slashing. Just I think just as a team,
even Chris, I would say,
yeah.
He had 0 on Friday.
Yep, and that can't happen. So I think it's just a combination of everyone, but that's probably the like main thing that stuck out to me, because last year they're like, I think they're middle of the pack in free throw attempts, but obviously the best free throw shooting team of all time. So yeah, they just need to get back to that because I think that's one of their strengths.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and Oubre not being around, that is one guy who was, at least you knew he was going to get to the rim in transition off of closeouts, that type of situation. They don't have a player that's like that. Crowder and Cam are more of shooters. So yeah, they're going to need to figure something out because it's also just like when you talk about kind of keeping your lead or getting back into games when you go down and whatever, that's obviously the easiest way to do that or one of. And so not having that in your arsenal really as an offensive weapon just puts you behind the eight ball. It means that you're going to have to make tough shots or you're going to have to make threes. And that's harder to rely on than, you know, just Booker going to the line six times in a row or whatever, you know, like we saw, have seen in the past from him. So let's dive in a little bit. You mentioned the late game stuff, and I think that's what got a lot of attention over the weekend, whether that was the calls or Monty and Chris's sort of decision-making in those spots. So let's dive into that in the next segment a little bit, and I think that'll lead as well into how the Suns can win games even if Booker isn't in the lineup, because I think they can. It's not doom for them if Booker has to deal with this hamstring thing for a little bit. But before we get into all of that, I want to tell you guys about the first sponsor of today's show, which I mentioned at the top, which is Built Bar. Built Bar was kind enough to send us out a sample of their six new amazing flavors, and I tried lemon almond cheesecake because I've been telling you guys about it for a long time, but it was the one that stood out to me, and I honestly had not tried it. It is delicious, as you would expect. I'm a guy, like, I want a little bit of chew in there. Like, I want the almond pieces. I want something to chew on. Like, I don't know. Maybe that's weird, but they're all covered in chocolate. They're all soft. They're all delicious, but I like that little crunch, and I like the lemon tang. It was perfect. It was incredible. Built Bar was very kind to send those our way. I cannot recommend it enough, and they're perfect for anybody. They're perfect if you're trying to lose weight, maintain weight. Maybe you're on a keto diet. There's really not much to these other than the flavor, the chocolate, and a ton of protein. So you can't really go wrong. It's not like it's going to break the bank. It's not going to ruin your day in terms of dieting or anything like that. They're like another new flavor, Cherry Barcia. It's only 130 calories, but you get 17 grams of protein in there. So maybe you're after a workout, before a workout, in between meals, whatever it is, it's the perfect hold you over. It's going to just fill you up, get you through the day. They're perfect. They taste delicious. And like I said, I personally recommend them. Now that I have tried the new flavors, I can stand by them even more. And they didn't go anywhere with the 12 originals either. So if you've ordered before and you're in the mood for something new, here's what you're going to do. Go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get 20% off your next order. Use the promo code LOCKEDON, that is the name of our network, all one word, for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. All right, we are back here recapping the weekend back-to-back, which I was at both of these games. They were pretty bonkers games, especially this Saturday game. And I'm honestly, a lot of it is blending together. I know Saturday was the double overtime. We had the Murray shot where it looked like he traveled. We had the Crowder shot off of a broken play where somehow Frank Kaminsky is dealing the deciding assist. But Friday was the game where the Suns did not call the timeout that I think it appeared that they should have. And they had a couple seconds left on the clock, Brandon, as Chris Paul got the ball. He explained it that basically he had already taken a dribble by the time it crossed his mind to call the timeout. Of course, you know, maybe there's an argument Monty should have been more aware and called it before Chris had the chance to do any of that. And then, you know, Friday we had them not fouling up three. Monty said they should have, and Murray knocks down the triple to go to overtime. Yes, it looked like he traveled, but I mean, you don't want to put yourself in those situations in the first place. So what did you make? This kind of flared up for the first time all season where we've seen them lose some games, but they haven't necessarily made these blunders, just sort of mental errors late like they did this weekend.
Yeah, I think it's very uncharacteristic of Chris Paul too. So it's like, I think he gets a pass. He's built for those late game situations. He's been in them so many times. So it's unfortunate that he had a little brain fart there, and Monty did as well. But, you know, at the end of the day, we were robbed of a, out of bounds play that would have resulted in like a corner three fadeaway by Booker from Monty. But it was just kind of, it's just one of those, like, both the games are just like everything that could possibly go wrong in the, like, in the crunch time just kind of went wrong for them. And it was just flashbacks of the old Suns.
Yeah, well, that's a little dark, but with the it had me thinking with the Chris Paul, Monty Williams, kind of they both owned up to it. Like, they both sort of took responsibility. It's obviously probably not, I personally don't feel like it's up to me to say, you know, which one of them, you know, this is stuff teams practice or they talk about. Like, I'm sure within that there is an understanding of what that situation calls for. And I don't know if we got a great idea of it from what they said. Maybe this will be a teaching moment where now they will drill it down. But it made me worry a little bit that Monty might be putting too much trust into Paul in those situations. But then at the same time, like you said, he's earned that. So it's not like it's a mistake to let Paul sort of operate on his own in those moments. But I guess, what do you hope that they learn from that? And what do you think kind of should be the protocol going forward? Because that is something you probably can clean up pretty easily.
Oh, yeah. I think the positive you can take away from it is that it's not going to happen again. Like, it's better to get stuff like that out of the way early in the year than it is, because I do think this is a playoff team. So get all that out of the way, out of your system now, learn from it. And, you know, hopefully, I think the responsibility is on both of them. And it's just a bang, bang play. It's, you know, it's really easy to say what you do in that moment, but sometimes, you know, that's life. And they just got to make sure it doesn't happen again. And I think there's a pretty good chance that they're going to be locked in late game situations, because that's kind of been their killer. Even last year, they just had trouble closing out games and just making silly mistakes that could have flipped the game in the other direction. So just cleaning those late game situations up and just being more alert. And I think we will see that. So if they're going to do it now, now's the best time.
That's true. And the thing, honestly, to me, like, late game, the bigger problem that I've noticed from Chris Paul isn't that turnover, or he had another one, I think, on Saturday too, sort of in the fourth quarter. And it isn't that he missed that or, you know, maybe wasn't communicating to foul up three against Murray in the second game. It's that the mid-range jumper is still not becoming the clutch weapon that you would have hoped when you acquired Chris Paul. And if there's anything to dive into with that, to me, on the part of Paul, it's just that his scoring, I mean, he's had some fourth quarters, but not the clutch, you know, last 2 minutes sort of shot making that that the team has needed, and especially without Booker, which we can dive into in the next segment. But one thing that I wrote about this afternoon on Bright Side of the Sun was Mikal Bridges fouling, and that wasn't so much of a problem on Friday, but what I wrote in the piece is that Friday was a nice parallel to Saturday, where he is out of the lineup, in and out of the game because of the fouls, because you see how important he is. He makes 6 of 8 threes, 24 points, 10 rebounds, 4 assists, a really, really good night for Mikal on Friday. And then Saturday, with him out, you obviously notice his absence. And it was a perfect opportunity with Booker out for him to show some offensive flash as well. So I had some quotes in there from Monty. It's something that it seems like they're talking about. But I think without Booker, it was something that did sort of rear its head, where they just, part of Mikal being like the second, third best player on this team, the best two-way player on this team probably, is that he can't be making those mistakes that he could afford to make last year when he's coming off the bench. He needs to be available and productive every moment he's in the game from now on. And we just kind of saw the downside of that this weekend, it felt like.
Yeah, him and Ayton both, you know, the foul trouble really killed them, but especially Bridges, just because he didn't really get that early game like rhythm that I think he needs just for his confidence offensively. And that's kind of why you saw, I mean, he still wound up with, I think, 11 points, which, you know, they're going to need more than that out of him, I think, consistently. And for him, he's just always been kind of, once he gets in his like rhythm, gets his confidence going early, he has like big games offensively, and he just never really had that chance, I feel like, especially early on, just coming out, picking up the, I think it was the third foul within like 9 seconds of the third quarter, or
first possession,
second quarter, whenever it was.
Third quarter. Yeah, you're right.
Third quarter. Yeah. So just finding a rhythm, I think, will be huge. So they're going to need him to stay on the court, and he's a very smart player. So I don't think it's going to be an ongoing issue, but you can definitely see that the negative impact it has when he does miss like time.
I agree with you. The point about him being like an aware and sort of kind of quick to learn guy, I think that's right. And he'll use these as experiences to understand that. And Monty's kind of point was like, it's just part of adapting to being an elite defender in this league. You have to know how to pick your spots. You have to know that first possession of the third quarter, like the foul was off the ball. Murray didn't even have the ball. He was about to come off an off-ball screen, and Mikhail just kind of put his hands to his chest. And it's like, that foul's not worth it. It's not, you weren't even, it wasn't a shooting foul. It wasn't protecting the rim. It wasn't anything. You kind of took yourself out of the game on something that didn't matter. So I think those will be moments where he'll be able to understand that, like, yeah, I want to set the tone against a guy like Jamal Murray, but I don't need to be physical and aggressive from the jump. But to end on a positive note here, Brandon, I did want to say, especially on Saturday, DeAndre Ayton did a really good job against Nikola Jokic. You know, I think we got the highlight reel of why it's pretty impossible to contain Nikola Jokic for 48 straight minutes. I mean, this guy basically scored a 30-point triple-double both nights. He was a little low on assists on Saturday, but besides that, this guy looked like an MVP all weekend while he was here in Phoenix. But when Ayton was in the game on Saturday before he fouled out and Frank Kaminsky was offered up as a sacrifice in overtime, Ayton did a really good job, I thought. And I think when Ayton checked out, Nikola Jokic was below 50% from the field and had not done much damage, to be honest with you. So I do want to give credit where credit is due. We did talk about Ayton in a negative way a fair bit last week, but that defensive performance is exactly what you need when you're going up against a guy like Jokic. And if Ayton doesn't have those fouls, or if they can buy him some more minutes off the bench with Šarić in there, like you mentioned, I think they might have won that Saturday game even without Booker.
Yeah, definitely. I think DeAndre's playing how we expect him to. And like, it was just a mental block with him early in the season offensively, I think. And he just finally figured it out. And just, you can see everything just clicking. And defensively, I mean, Jokic, he's going to get his, like, he's essentially unguardable whenever he's, just because of the way he plays, is just so slow and methodical that, you know, you can, he did as much as you can, like, can to make him uncomfortable, but he's just playing at a different level right now. So I think he did a really good job of containing him. And they're definitely missing some size on the second unit right now. And Dario, while I don't think he would have done any better, he would have at least helped just giving another body, and especially with the foul trouble Ayton got into in the second game, that definitely kind of,
and he's better than Frank. I mean, Dario's he's at least strong, definitely. Right?
Yeah. He's just gets in the way. He's like, he's a deterrent, and they just need more bodies. Like, especially in, like I said, with Ayton and foul trouble. And yeah, I think I want to say, I saw it on Twitter earlier that Jokic was, this season, when Ayton's guarding him, he's 13 for 34, 38%.
Yeah.
And has three turnovers. He's blocked him twice, and he has zero free throw attempts. So those are pretty insane stats. And especially just compared to like what Jokic has been doing this year, it's pretty mind-boggling to see that.
And he did the other side as well, where, you know, I think part of what you have to do against a guy like Jokic, like the defense or the advanced metrics on his defense show him as being pretty positive, but we know that's not in the area of the game he's going to impact the most. You want to make him work on defense while also, you know, making him uncomfortable when he's operating with the ball or when they're on offense. And I think Ayton did both of those things. Like, he was aggressive enough where Jokic couldn't just rest on defense while also, you know, getting some blocks and, you know, just making him uncomfortable, not allowing him to get all the way to the basket and making him give the ball up, stuff like that, where like he's probably the MVP front runner. I know people took issue with me saying that. I don't really know why on Twitter this weekend, but this guy's been balling out all year long. He's averaging a career high pretty much in every single category. He's averaging a triple double. Mm-hmm. He's leading the league in assists. Like, you're not going to stop him. But Ayton did just about everything you could ask. And so that was a nice moment for him. Like, he had some good games. Okay, yeah, Grizzlies undersized. They're out with their center's out. You know, Houston, Christian Wood gets hurt. They don't really have size anyway. Let's see you do it against the big leagues, and he did. And so I think Ayton deserves a big tip of the hat for that. But I think Ayton's actually where we should start as we talk about Booker being out and how they can win these games, or, you know, just as an educational sort of opportunity here where we can see the Suns sort of get some offense going when their leading scorer is not in the game. But I want to take a quick break first to tell you about Bet Online. The Super Bowl is 2 weeks away. We know the matchup now. It is going to be Brady versus Mahomes, Bucks, Chiefs in Tampa Bay, which is really weird. As somebody who rooted for the Cardinals to be in that situation, I'm resentful that it ended up being Brady. But the Super Bowl means prop bets, guys. That's the fun of the Super Bowl. Don't bet on the line. It's going to be tight. It's going to be miserable if you don't get it. But the prop bets, the fumble, will there be a safety? Who's going to how long is the national anthem to take? All that fun stuff is what the Super Bowl is about. If you are a better, that's what makes it fun and silly, and especially this year. Come on, we need some lightheartedness. So there's only one place that has you covered, and only one place that we trust on the Locked On Podcast Network. That is betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON, the name of our network, all one word, for your 50% welcome bonus. That's not to mention, so we've got the Super Bowl, of course, but there is still college basketball every night, NHL every night, NBA every night, and some baseball getting started. So it's going to be fun. We have had sports basically nonstop since like June, and it's not stopping anytime soon. So don't sit on the sidelines, get involved, get in on the action, and don't forget that promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Bet online. Your online sportsbook experts. Okay, we are back. Check out our show tomorrow. I'm bringing on Yasmin Duwale from Basketball News. We're going to talk about inside the NBA and why it is going insane. And remember the Draymond fine when he said Devin Booker should demand out? Yeah, we're going to talk about everything sort of relating to that TNT show and what's going on. It should be a fun conversation, so check that one out. We'll have game recaps for you Thursday and Friday, and then we'll be back next week with Brandon. So good stuff every single day. Hit that subscribe or that follow button on whatever platform you're listening on. But right now, we're going to dive into how do the Suns pull out some wins. Monty Williams, maybe unintentionally, Brandon, dropped that Booker could be looking at about a week. I don't know if that's really like a scientifically measured statement there, but Monty did let that slip, and obviously we know hamstrings can be pesky. So what did you see from that Saturday game that you think the Suns can draw from, or what do you think needs to happen with Booker out of the lineup for them to win against Oklahoma City and Golden State this week?
Yeah, I think this team's built pretty well to withstand, you know, Booker missing a few games. Obviously long term they're gonna absolutely need him, so they could just err on the side of caution, especially with the hamstring injury. As you mentioned, they're very hit or miss as far as timetables. So I think just playing it safe with him and just not trying to rush him back, just thinking big picture is the smart move to do. And I was a little upset that Langston Galloway didn't get any minutes, really. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, Abdel Nader with all the wings in the starting lineup was, you know, obviously they're going to have to play him just because they're going to need more bodies off the bench that can guard wings. But I think Galloway's earned the right to get a crack at the rotation with Booker out, and they could have used his like instant offense, I think, in stretches last night. So I think we'll see more of him. And, you know, I think it's just going to be like the bench unit really that has to step up. You know, Campaign needs to get back to his old ways, and hopefully Sarge will come back soon because he really is an engine that just unlocks the entire second unit. So just collectively as a team, I think they're going to have times where they might struggle with shot creation. And I think Chris Paul is going to have to, I mean, he shot 20 shots on Saturday. So he's going to need to be around that range with Booker out. But overall, it's just going to be a lot of, you know, heavy doses of Ayton and Paul, the pick and roll, and the wings just, you know, shooting the three and just sharing the ball. So I think it's going to be, I think they're set up pretty well to withstand this, especially with the schedule coming up. It's not too brutal. So I think they'll be fine in the short term, but obviously they're going to need him back.
For sure. I think with the starting lineup, the tweaks are pretty minimal. Like if we see the aggressive version of McHale that we've seen a lot of nights this year, I feel like, you know, he could be in for some big scoring performances with Booker out. I think he's in a mentality where he understands that he can impact the game that way. And with Booker out, I think he'd be up to it if he can stay out of foul trouble, which is why I mentioned that in the last segment. I mean, I think Ayton seems to be in a good groove right now. So that shouldn't be too much of a tweak. And I agree, like Paul seemed to understand he needed to score more on Saturday. If a few more of those threes go down, which he's just had a brutal season shooting the three so far, maybe that turns into more of a thing, but I don't expect it to. I think if a couple more of those go down, even, you know, we might be talking about a different result on Saturday as well. He was just one of six. So all things considered, I think the starting unit, I like you, not too worried about. But the guy I did want to single in on it here is Cam Johnson. It feels like even before Saturday when he went out of the game with a calf, I don't know if it was a calf. He was cramped for sure. I don't know exactly where that was materializing for him. He had to leave the game. He couldn't extend his leg, according to Monty. I mean, I don't think that will linger. But even before that, he seemed to be going through a little bit of an adjustment period in that starting lineup. So I'm curious what you've seen of him. Why do you think the offense is not coming as smoothly to him as it was earlier in the season when he was coming off the bench?
Yeah, I think there's just going to be a little bit of a, you know, growing pains with him finding his feet in this new role. And I think I was very happy to see him shoot 11 threes. I think he needs to be shooting 10 threes every single game. I've said this a few times now. And so I think his confidence will come with just, especially with Booker out, they're going to need someone to step up. And I think he's going to get a little more freedom and some more just off the dribble stuff and just finding just a way for him to be assertive, but also not step outside of what they're trying to do offensively as a team. Just finding that right balance, I think, is where he's at right now. He's trying to be aggressive, but also he just needs to like pick his spots a little bit better in certain situations. But overall, not too concerned. Same with like McHale. They're both super high IQ guys that I think will figure it out. And it's going to take a couple games, and in the long run, they're going to be better because of it.
Yeah, I would say one thing on Cam, and I kind of tweeted this toward the end of the game, but it was because it was something I noticed throughout, which is in the situations where he's attacking a closeout, it very much, the footwork and sort of the athleticism of that move for him seems a little bit difficult for him right now. Like you see some of the best guys where they're on the run by the time they catch it. They're able to identify what the defense is going to do. They know they're not going to shoot, and you know they're in motion by the time they catch the ball. They're ready to go. And maybe that's not quite what you want him to do. I mean, you want him to be looking for that three first and foremost. So there's going to be some balance, but he gets kind of hip checked by the closing out defender a lot of the time, or at least it felt like that this weekend, where he's getting bumped on his drive when the closeout comes, and that's sort of derailing his momentum and his ability to score before it ever even really gets to him. So some of that stuff I think is where you see the adjustment process happening, not just with moving to the starting lineup, that doesn't really impact it, but just as a player finding his role offensively and expanding his game the way he has. And I'm excited to watch it because he's still impactful. I mean, he had 19 points on 16 shot attempts still on Saturday, and despite kind of having an up and down game. So not too much to worry about, but just sort of to keep an eye on with Cam. The last thing, Brandon, is we will probably see, and we already have seen, a lot of Abdel Nader. And he closed the game. He was in overtime partially because of Cam being out, and everything else that came when overtime hit, Ayton being out as well. So Nader and Kaminsky were with the other three starters. But if Booker does miss at least a couple more games here, Nader will be there. And I think it's been up and down with him. I get the appeal. He's long. He's really quick, which is good. He's somebody who's not afraid to attack the rim more so than the other guys. Not so much of a, you know, three-point heavy guy. Maybe he could take some more of those, but he's going to get to the basket in transition or when the space is there. But he also didn't make his free throws at the end of the Saturday game when they could have tied the game again. They were down three. He only made one. So what have you seen of him? Do you think he's earned a shot? Do you think he maybe goes back to the outside of the rotation when Booker's healthy again?
So I think he's definitely a rotation player. He's someone that can give you spot minutes whenever you need him, like for injury, foul trouble. One of the wings are slumping or you just need a different look. Like I'm comfortable giving him like, you know, 10, 15 minutes a game. But when we start talking about 30 minutes, I understand like it was out of necessity last night or Saturday night. But I think he's definitely earned a shot to, you know, crack the rotation. He's shot like 38% from three last year for OKC and played in 55 games. He carved out a role for a Chris Paul team that, you know, made the playoffs. So I think he's definitely someone that he'll get time, but hopefully not 30 minutes very often.
Yeah.
And yeah, he can play though. He's got a long wingspan, shoot.
He's a little bit of a microwave type of, like, you know, we haven't really seen it, but just watching him in the past, like he can get hot and change a game.
Exactly. Yeah. So having him and like in Galloway as well, who's another like microwave scorer, just two streaky guys that I think they can count on in small stretches and, you know, see if they have anything. If they get off to a hot start, then just kind of ride the wave. And if not, then, you know, you have so many other options. So it's just kind of a nice luxury to have as like a fourth wing on this roster that they didn't really have last year. I'm very grateful that we're not seeing those three guard lineups with Okobo, Jerome, and Javon Carter.
Oh, I'm done those. Watching Oladipo play basketball. Yeah.
Yeah. Those lineups are brutal. So that's one plus to having Nader.
What team is Oladipo on? Did he make the NBA?
I think Brooklyn picked him up. I don't know if he's active or if he's still on their team, but I want to say Brooklyn picked him up. So now Steve Nash can fix him.
The Phoenix basketball gods are looking down on that situation, hopefully. Okay, last guy here, if we're talking about what kind of needs to improve for the Suns to win, and I do credit Kellen Olsen for making this observation. Even since Cameron Payne has come back from his injury, he has not attacked the rim. That craft at the basket, some of those scoop layups and those types of shots that he was so effective at making that allowed him to overcome not being the most athletic or big guy on the floor, those are gone. He was 0-5 from the field, not gone permanently, but he has not shown that since returning from that ankle injury. He was 0-5 from the field, minus 21 on Saturday, didn't even make a three either, and only two assists. Looks like not the guy we saw, and he was a guy who was genuinely changing games for the Suns early on, and I think without him, it does start to be a really uphill battle. He was a major strength for this team, so maybe it's something about, you know, just playing himself back into physical shape that allows him to be the guy he was, or maybe they need to sit him for a few more games. But it definitely feels to me, Brandon, like if Payne's not at that level, that bench really has a hard time being what it can be, even if some of the other guys come back.
Exactly. And, you know, ankle injuries are always tough. You know, it takes a while for you to trust your ankle again after that. So I think he'll eventually get to that point. But right now it's rough. You can tell it's affecting him a little bit on his confidence, on his drives. And obviously, you know, playing without Dario on the bench and now Cam Johnson's in the starting lineup, it's not the same bench that it was early in the year, too. So it's a different look overall. So they're definitely going to need him to step up, especially with Booker out. I think that's pretty much going to be the key for this team. If, you know, him and Carter need to be the energizers and get back to that, that spark that they're giving them in the bubble and early on in this year as well.
Yeah, I still think, like, I know Monty's a guy that, I don't know, he doesn't change the lineup a ton like some coaches do, Nick Nurse or different guys like that around the league. Even the Dallas lineup has changed a lot this year. There's some coaches who have the comfort with that. Monty's not necessarily one of those guys, but I would consider putting Nader in that starting lineup and maybe putting Cam Johnson back on the bench just for the stretch while Booker's out, and then maybe return to the Cam and Bridges forward spot with Booker in there. But I think that it could stabilize some things. You know, the offense and the starting unit's going to come from Paul Ayton and Bridges anyway. You don't necessarily need Cam in there. I think he looked pretty comfortable. It might kind of kill a few birds with one stone there. I'm not saying that continuing to change things just because you have a player out is always good, but I do think you want to get back on the right track here. You don't want to fall below 500 and start to rack up so many losses in a row. It's something I would consider. I don't know if Monty will do it. I don't know if, you know, Nader's not ideal. He didn't play great in the fourth quarter overtime this weekend. But I think it's worth a look. It just could stabilize the overall rotation. But I think that will close us out this week. You again can follow him on Twitter at AZ Sports Zone. He's here every single Monday with us. You can read him at Bright Side of the Sun and at his own website, Zona Hoops. Thank you once again, Brandon. It's always fun. We're closing off our first month here of these shows.
Yeah, appreciate you having me on. And I'm going to end this with going to call my shot and say, in these next four games, Cam Johnson is going to hit 7+ threes in at least one game. And, you know, it's the whole Devin Booker watch with the 7-3 thing. So I'm just throwing that out in the universe.
Before, yeah, Cam, while Book's out, just like the cruel, yeah, twist of the knife there.
Yep, it's some in the next four games, it's coming. So,
hey, I'm all for it. I want to see Cam succeed. And I agree with your point from earlier. He should be taking a ton every single night. 3 of 11 is fine. Take 11, and if you make three, you make three. If you make seven, like you said, one night, obviously it'll balance out. So it'll be interesting. I think it'll be a good sort of early season test for this team if they do have to play a couple. It's nice that one is the Thunder. That is a very lucky state of affairs for the Suns, but we will have a whole lot more to talk about come next Monday. And as I said, tomorrow we will be right back here in your feed with Yasmin Dowale of Basketball News talking about what on earth Shaquille O'Neal and Charles Barkley are talking about these days. That should be a fun show. But until then, I hope everyone has a great day, and we will talk to you tomorrow.